Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Paragon and Millennium Cities. It's Monday night. Hope you all had a good weekend, had a good week since we were last on. This is Paragon Radio. I'm your host, Pogoman. And We're broadcasting live from the Paragon Radio News Satellite at high altitude of 6.00125 feet above sea level. Do the math and you figure it out. Okay, let's bring him on. My co-host, some people say he's mad. Some people say he's a Viking. But some people just say he's Mad Viking.
And yep, we're here on both City of Heroes and Champions. I could not find a holiday that was funny today.
I know. It's you know, some weeks you get that. Sometimes you just get those. How was your week, sir?
Oh, good. It was good. I was able to relax a little bit here. And especially the fact that now on Sundays, we will have Texas Sunday on Dawn Radio as the DJ Texas returns right behind Fritz.
Oh, that's good. There you go. Hey, I'm just looking over the rooms here. We got a bunch of people showing up, hanging out with us. Let's do. I think we should do the roll call right now.
Yep.
You got me and you hanging out here in Paragon City and City of Heroes, DJ Texas hanging out. We've got Night at the Opera, part 2112, Temple Syrinx. If you know the reference, we've been talking about that. Canadian supergroup, former supergroup, Rush. Let's see here. We got Cassie Knight of Siege Perilous, Law of One of Celestial Warriors hanging out. I don't know if she's listening, but she's hanging out with us, so it counts. Over in the sister city, Millennium City of Champions Online, we've got yours truly, Mad Viking. We're hanging out in the WCOC studios. Alan and Clarence, Mr. Nom Nom there?
Yep.
He's hanging out. It looks like he's leaning on that cube thing that's floating around. Doesn't it? It looks like he's just pressed up against it. Natalia Kromstock, reading the paper. So glad she's paying attention to what's going on here. Multitask, probably. Silvery Grit, staying on top of the cameras, making sure they get us. And Texas is there. The three of us, we are everywhere. We are a savoir faire. We are just hanging out in the studio. Oh, so glad everybody could tune in tonight, hanging out. Just doing our thing. I had a most interesting week. Last Wednesday, I went to the UBS Arena once again, just watch All Elite Wrestling. Fantastic show. You want to be in your seat by 7 o'clock. Because from 7 to 8, they start taping for the YouTube show Dark Elevation. 8 to 10, they go live for Wednesday Night Dynamite. 10 to 11, they taped the Rampage of Friday Night show. So if you got in touch with me, I could have told you who won the matches for Rampage. It's kind of,
it comes in handy when you
want
to place the bet at the bar. It's like,
If you know somebody who actually bets you, if you know somebody who places bets with you on the wrestling matches, why, I don't know. You could have said, Bogo, who wins the matches? You know, if they don't realize those matches are taped ahead of time, because last week again, because of the NBA playoffs, the matches run at 5:30 instead of 10 o'clock at night. You could have sent me a text, and I would have told you who won the matches. But something really cool at the end of it. They had two dark. Well, it was a dark match and then a dark event. This goes back to the feud between MJF and CM Punk. MJF, even though he's the heel of heels in AEW, he's from Long Island. He wants to be as popular as Roddy Piper was in Portland, as popular as Ric Flair in the Carolinas, and even when Hitman Bret Hart was a heel.
He's in Canada.
Right, in Canada, he was the number one face. So on Long Island, at the UBS Arena, MJF comes out, they cheer the hell out of him. I'm like, I'm in Bizarro World. But at the time, he had a feud with CM Punk. CM Punk walks out. Everybody but me and a handful of people were booing CM Punk to death. I was like, huh? What? So This time, now, MGF has a feud with Wardlow. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So Wardlow got booed. CM Punk came out earlier in the night wearing a New York Islanders jersey. UBS Arena is where the Islanders play.
Right.
Right? He still got booed because they don't forget. His normal outfit, his normal wrestling gear is black with white and red trim. This
right.
time it was blue with white and orange trim, the color of the Islanders. He still got booed this time. He still got booed. And I was sitting next to people like, hey, and we were joking, at least he's trying. It's like, yeah, but the fans don't forget. And so at the end of the night, if everything was over, MGF came out saying, you guys have fun tonight. I know we're all a little bit tired. It's running late, but hey, did you have fun? He goes, I want to thank you all for booing Wardlow and that PG Punk, he calls him, because that's what he thinks about his pipe bombs. Remember, he had back in WWE, he had this huge pipe bomb that got him censored. They shut the house mic off on him. But
twice.
He goes, you're not – twice, yeah, twice. And, you know, you're not the pipe bomb guy anymore. You're just PG Punk. And so everybody was chanting PG Punk. CM Punk comes out again at the end of it. He goes, oh, you think you're going to fight? Well, you're going to fight, but it's not against me. It's another Long Islander. They are promoting Taz's son, Hook, as the next, like, top badass.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not that big. He's just a big he's just a martial artist type guy, right? Like
right.
Taz was. Like, he was in the suplex machine. So Hook is supposed to be the submission machine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Hook comes out. He rolls out of the ring. This guy, Danhausen, who's supposed to put curses on people. Hook is the only one he can't put a curse on. So he sees Danhausen. He's like, come on, man. No. I'm just trying to go home. He gets him back in the ring. He backs up into Hook. Hook has a hood on. He pushes his head. He goes, oh, no. As he spins around, he drops to his knees, holds his hand out like the heels do.
Right.
And he holds his hand, shakes it, and goes, see you on the side. He goes to leave the ring, wouldn't let go of his hand. He's like, come on. No, come on. I'm just trying to leave the ring. Suplexes him, puts him in this submission called the Red Rum, knocks him out. He's laying in the ring on his back, arms over his head, like he's asleep. This is why you've got to find this video. He's out cold for 15 to 20 minutes. The crew is trying to wake him up so they can take the ring down. There's a guy trying to wake him up. He can't wake him up. People around the ring who are on the floor videoing this. He does not move for 15 to 20 minutes. They finally have to push something over to put him on top of. They wheel him out of the arena. He sold the hell out of it. The house lights have come on. Like, when you get there, the house lights, it's dark in there, more or less. The house lights have come back on now. Like, there's nothing else to see. The show's over. Thank you. Good night. Like, we're done. Except this. People are laughing. People who go, oh, I hated Punk before this. He's selling houses. I'm going to have to buy his T-shirt. About 10 people told me this. I'm like, see, he's doing his job. Because I didn't realize how good of a seller he is. This was the funniest thing. I found like 10 instances, like, or about at least 5, maybe 7 instances, maybe 10 by now. But it was like, oh my God, this is like the greatest thing they've ever seen at this arena. Like, I've never seen anybody try and sell it like this before. And I'm texting my stepsister. She's waiting for me to come home. And I'm like, sorry, I'm running really late. And I told her, she goes, oh my God, how long did he lay there? Like 20 minutes. She goes, that's so funny. I was like, my battery ran out because I was taking pictures. She goes, no, that's cool. I'm like, I'm sure we can find it on the internet tomorrow. I'm like, I'm sure we did find it. And she's laughing. She goes, that is funny. Oh my God. So I got home no time at all because once you get past UBS Arena and you're on a certain road, it's like no traffic at all getting back. So I had a very late dinner. I didn't even bother putting the wrestling on. I waited until the next day to watch it. But the next day, we got IHOP, and we went to the movies. The fun didn't end. We went to see Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Two thumbs up. I'm not going to do any spoilers. Just go see it. It was awesome. It was great. Everything that was building up to it. Go see it. Yes, Night at the Opera, saying her name, Night at the Opera. Yes, it's definitely Queen-related, mm-hmm. Night at the Opera. Because, one, two things. One, it's the name of a Queen album, but they got that name from a Marx Brothers movie.
Yep.
So, there you go. There you go. Yes.
This reminds me, like, I knew a friend of mine, fortunately he did pass away, but he worked the indies, and one of the shows had Randy Orton come in, a very young Randy Orton.
Oh, okay.
and while in the midst of the wrestling, because my friend, he was the jobber of the, you know,
okay.
You need someone to always lose. He was Barry Horowitz.
Right.
He was Barry O.
He was no. It's called a development match, an enhancement match.
But anyway, he's wrestling, and his wife is looking, and all of a sudden you hear in the crowd here, Randy Scott Wood. This is before strategic garments were worn.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
If anyone remembers WWE, Rene Dupree, and yeah, Randy had that. Well, it ended up going to, they all went to the WWE Raw at the time being, and Randy was wrestling him, his wife, and a few others that was there. They're all up in the cheap seats, and they start chanting, Randy Scott Wood! Randy Scott Wood! Randy Scott Wood! It
That's
didn't
funny.
Pick up, but people were looking, going like, what the hell are they talking about?
Well, in the indies, they start chanting whatever, and they hope, like, The weirdest thing was during the there was a match between Ruby Soho and Rio. These four kids there just absolutely hate Rio. They were jumping up and down, stomping in circles, chanting Rio sucks. And I was like, dudes, okay. It got to the point people in the half the arena were chanting for Rio to win, but they knew she was going to lose the match because I guess they know that Ruby's supposed to make it to the finals or something of this tournament. And it's like they were just cheering for Rio for no reason, just to shut these kids up, to annoy these kids. And it's funny, they moved up a couple of seats, and this older guy, Asian guy, he whispered something to them, and they started chanting, let's go Ruby. And I was kidding around going, oh, that must be Rio's dad.
Things you find
out. I have a good time when I go with those. I have a good time when I go to wrestling. I make friends with everybody there. They tell us, like, yeah, because, you know, fortunately, none of my friends like wrestling, like to go to these things, but it's like, yeah, it's going wrestling. Everybody's going there to watch wrestling and have fun and just, you know, when you start making comments and jokes about what's going on, everybody has fun. Everybody just has fun and a hoot and a holler and just, you know. Well, like I said, I thought it was funny. Like, that morning, they announced who's going to be there for the meet and greets and the prices. Ruby Soho. Okay.
Yeah.
She's one of the top women wrestlers, right? $40. They had this guy. He's a rookie male wrestler, to meet him, $50. Okay. I was like, wait a minute. A male rookie wrestler, $50 to meet him. A top women wrestler, $40. I don't know who sets these prices up, but, and then there was a tag team, $60. All right, tag team, all right, that's like $30 each. All right, that's not bad. But between the top woman wrestler, and the rookie male wrestler, it was $10 more to meet him.
A little off in the math there.
And for people who are wondering who Ruby Soho is in WWE, she was Ruby Riott of the Riott Squad. So, There you go.
All right. Well, let's see. Did a little research and
DJ Texas asking the Wookiee. Yes, the Wookiee. No, the Rookiee. Yes, the Wookiee. The Wookiee. His last name is Yoda. He just joined a faction with Daniel Bryanson and John Moxley. That guy. Yeah, he's the Rookiee. Yes, he's the Wookiee. Yes, he's the Wookiee. Yes, that's why. Yes, yes, he gets paid extra because he's the Wookiee. Yes, this is a Star Wars convention. Yes.
All right. Well, let's see. I checked to see if there was anything on Ship of Heroes, and I got nothing.
I checked for City of Titans, and after their big thing a few weeks ago, nothing. But I do have some updates.
Okay.
This is last week on the 12th. The CW has canceled a few shows.
Mm-hmm.
Now, last week, I think we talked about, or a couple weeks ago, we talked about Batwoman and DC's Legends of Tomorrow being canceled basically after they went off air. So they didn't have time to do a really big, you know, finale. Like the season finale, they were left as cliffhangers, you know, to set up next season.
Right.
Well, that's it. That's it. That's that. Okay, so late last month, the CW canceled Batwoman and DC's Legends of Tomorrow, significantly cut down on its superhero shows. However, those aren't the last sci-fi and superhero series to get the axe by the network. Via The Hollywood Reporter, CW has canceled Naomi after a single-season introduction of the DC heroine. I saw the last couple episodes to watch. Probably watch them tomorrow. Today's other CW casualties, or last Thursday, include the reboots of The 4400, Charmed got canceled. I have like half a season to watch. Roswell, New Mexico, and Dynasty finally got canceled. I thought Dynasty got canceled like a couple of seasons ago, but it's still in. Now you might be asking, why is the CW dropping so many shows? The biggest factor appears to be that the CW may soon be sold to the Nexstar station group. And if that happens, Nexstar is expecting to significantly cut back on the CW's scripted content. Many of today's cancellations were also low performers compared to shows on other networks. Since The Flash and Superman Lois have already been renewed, the lone DC superhero show left hanging is Stargirl. The third season of Stargirl will premiere this summer, and the CW will presumably make its decision soon after. It is also widely believed that The Flash will end after season 9, perhaps leaving Superman and Lois the only surviving Arrowverse show. The other CW shows currently on the bubble are Legacies and the Nancy Drew spinoff Tom Swift. The CW will announce its full schedule later this month. I didn't watch Nancy Drew. This I saved it. I had it on my DVR, and then it got deleted somehow. Those bastards. Okay. Now, Ms. Marvel, co-creator, it turns out that Kamala Khan has new powers in the MCU, and the co-creator Ms. Marvel reacts to this. So this week, Kevin Feige confirmed that Disney Plus's upcoming Ms. Marvel series is making a few changes to Kamala Khan's power set. This isn't too surprising since the MCU has never been a carbon copy of the stories that inspired it, but at least one of Kamala's co-creators supports the changes. Marvel editor Sana Amanat co-created Kamala Khan with G. Will Wilson, Steve Wicker, Adrian Alfano, and Jamie McKelvey in 2013. In a new interview with Entertainment Weekly, Amanat shared her own thoughts about how the series... Hold on. Take a drink. God damn, they need to finish. About how the series handles the character's powers. Amanat is also a producer of the show, so she had a say in its creative direction. She also bolstered Feige's hints that the source of Kamala's abilities will be explored in other future MCU stories. Obviously, so much of the show is an adaptation, said Amanat, and we thought it was important to make sure that her powers are linking to larger stories in the Marvel Universe. We wanted to make sure there was a little bit more story to tell after the series. Obviously, she goes into The Marvels, which is the sequel to Captain Marvel. The powers do look different, which is very controversial. I know people are like, how dare you change the powers? I know people are upset about it, but as someone who is probably one of the closest people to this character from the inception, and having spoken to Willow about this as well, I think Willow and I have always felt that this made sense. This was the right move because there are bigger stories to tell. Okay, there's an article explaining the changes to their powers. I want to read that next because I don't know what the hell's going on here. It's definitely going to be strange for some fans to watch Kamala without her traditional and biggin' look. Regardless, Amanda assured viewers that the series will handle her powers on screen in a way that stays true to the essence of what made them stand out on the page. It's really fun to give Kamala different kinds of powers that feel big in scope and cinematic in a different way. We could do a lot of fun things with her. I don't want to spoil too much about how she uses her powers, but they're fun and bouncy. Okay, whatever that means. At the same point, the essence of what the powers are in the comics is there, both from a metaphorical standpoint and from a visual standpoint. We're doing the embiggened fist. We're doing the elements that make her feel and look kind of crazy, but also really cool. I think it's going to be familiar to people, but at the same time, different and refreshing and unique. And I'm sorry, and a unique way. And Ms. Marvel will premiere on Disney Plus June 8th. Okay, now, this came out on May 9th where Kevin F. explains the changes to Ms. Marvel's powers. Okay. So although Kamala Khan broke the comics mold in 2014, as Marvel's first Muslim superhero, her polymorphic stretching powers weren't entirely unfamiliar. After all, the House of Ideas had already popularized similar abilities in 1961 with Reed Richards of the Fantastic Four. But when Kamala makes her live-action debut on Disney Plus next month, June 8th, we can definitely expect a few tweaks to her character. In a new interview with Empire, Kevin Feige explained why Ms. Marvel made some of these changes. The first trailer from Ms. Marvel previously suggested that Kamala's powers are more cosmic in nature than those of her comic book counterpart. Now, Kevin F. confirms once and for all that this is indeed the case. Many fans have assumed that this is because Marvel is currently developing a Fantastic Four reboot and doesn't want to introduce two stretching superheroes in the same time frame. Regardless, Kevin F. hinted that it's a bit more complicated than that. Specifically, the origin of Kamala's powers might relate to the overarching storyline that ties all Phase 4 projects together. Kamala came about in a very specific time when the comic book continuity, Kevin F. says, she is now coming into a very specific time when within the MCU continuity, and those two things didn't match. What we will learn about where those powers come from and how they come about is specific to the MCU. He adds, if you want big, giant hands and arms, well, they're here in spirit, if not in stretchy, plastic-type ways. I forget how to pronounce it. I've said it 20 different ways, and at one point I knew how to say it, I'd say Kevin F. We'll also discuss Kamala's role in 2023's The Marvels, which finds her sharing the screen with Brie Larson's Carol Danvers and Teyonah Parris' Monica Rambeau. Naturally, this isn't your typical solo MCU film, as it features three headliners and functions as a sequel to three different Marvel projects. But it sounds like the source of Kamala's powers will play a major role in driving the plot forward. It taps into the future of her story as it connects to her other friends that she will meet in the upcoming film. She's interested in knowing, great, does that mean I'm an Asgardian? Did I get hit with gamma rays? No. It's seemingly none of those things. It goes to her own past and her heritage and lineage. Okay, there we go. We got those answers. Now, back to the CW. We had those cancellations of all those shows, right?
Right.
But the CW has ordered Gotham Knights and the Winchesters to series.
Yeah.
So, shortly after another round of cancellations took out most of its sci-fi and superhero shows, the CW has ordered three new series for the fall 2022 schedule. And the most significant show of that trio is Gotham Knights. a new Batman-related series that has no connection to either the video game that shares its name or the recently canceled Batwoman. Via the Hollywood Reporter, Gotham Knights takes place almost immediately after Bruce Wayne Batman is murdered. Or is he? I don't know. That wasn't there. I just added speculation. Oscar Morgan will star in the series as Turner Hayes, Wayne's adoptive son, who is charged with killing his father. To clear his name, Turner will unite with the children of Gotham City's villains. What? And also a new generation of heroes, including Harper Rowe / Bluebird, played by Fallon Smythe, Stephanie Brown / Spoiler, played by Anna Lore, Carrie Kelly, Navia Robbins, Cullen Rowe, played by Tyler DiChiari, and Dwella Dent, played by Olivia Rose Keegan. Misha Collins, hey, we know that name, has also been cast on the series as Harvey Dent. Gotham Knights was created by Batwoman writers Chad Fevish, James, Stottero, and Natalie Abrams. But as mentioned above, the two shows do not share continuity and is not part of the Arrowverse. Okay. The Supernatural spinoff, The Winchesters, was also given a series order. It is a prequel story that will explore the relationship between John, played by Drake Roger, and Mary, played by Meg Donnelly, the parents of Sam and Dean Winchester from the original show. Jensen Ackles is executive producing the show, and he will also lend his voice to the series as Dean Winchester narrates the adventures of his parents. Former Arrow star Catherine McNamara has also landed a new series on the CW. She will portray Abby Walker in Walker Independence, a prequel spinoff from Jared Padalecki's Walker series. McNamara had previously been attached to headline Green Arrow and the Canaries, but the CW ultimately passed on that spinoff. Boo, boo. Okay.
All right, now, I want to bring up something, and this is going back to my memory of comic books. Now, Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan, basically, she just came into popularity on her own with the Marvel Universe, as well as should be. But, you know, the pushing of the first Muslim, I'm calling shenanigans. I could think of two others.
I was going to say, there was a, I could have sworn there was a Muslim hero. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
There's got to be.
The first one, Arabian Night.
Yes. Okay.
Arabian Night. We are talking stereotypical sword welding, rode a magic carpet. He was an Iraqi. His last known appearance back in the 90s. This is the time of the Iraq War. And Iraq was holding, Saddam Hussein was holding his family hostage, so he had to work, you know, with the rest of the people that was going against the, this was the, when the Brotherhood of New Mutants was working for the government, or like Freedom Force or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's number one. The other one is from the X-Men, Dust.
I don't know what happened to Dust. They hardly even mentioned Dust anymore. Remember, that could be during the No More Mutants.
No, this was after that.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I call shenanigans. Every time I have called shenanigans, don't do that on Facebook, let me tell you.
I am doing this right now.
Because God forbid you hit the wrong person.
don't do this to us, man, because we will. I'm looking up now, category Muslim superheroes. Oh, wait a minute. There's another one.
There's another one.
Monet St. Croix.
Ooh, that's right. I mean, it was never fully established because they were playing more of the rich kid factor. I mean, that's M of Generation X.
All right. Generation X number one, September 1994.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at, yep,
was,
I looked up. I looked it up, but apparently
I want to say from Dubai.
I'm looking it up right now. I typed in Muslim superheroes.
Dubai or Qatar? It's one of those two.
Okay, hold up. Let me see. Place of birth: Sarajevo, Bosnia.
Ooh.
But she has citizenship in French, Yugoslavian, Bosnian, Algerian, Monica Krakoa. So she's in Krakoa. She's there now, but hold on. I'm going through when I typed in characters who are followers of Islam. Kamala Khan came up, but then this is all on the same page. Monet St. Croix.
Mm-hmm.
Dust came up. Red Dagger. Cameron?
That one I can't remember.
Yeah, Faisal Hussein, Josiah Al-Hai Sadiq, Ogdana Naki. There's apparently 77 of them.
Yeah, but the two that I remember
in the Marvel database. In the Marvel database, there's like 77 of them, and apparently most of them are from Earth 616.
Yeah.
This is our
Earth. But like I said, Arabian Night was the first one to my memory. And yes, stereotypical is all hell, but...
Right, but the problem here is they're giving their actual names, not like their hero names. So it's like, can you give me something more to go on? Can you give me their hero name or something here? Come on now, give me something... Apparently here under G goes George Washington Bridge, Earth 616. Apparently that's his name.
G.W. Bridge. Oh,
G.W. Bridge. Right. Okay. He's Muslim.
Yeah, G.W. Bridge appeared in X-Force, the ever infamous years of Lee Field or Liefeld.
Right. And what's funny is when he left there, he had another character drawn that looks exactly like him. And some a lot of people are like, are you sure that's not him? No. That was his one answer. No. Like, you couldn't expand on that? Because when you do a one-word answer, it's kind of like, come on, man. There are 109 appearances of him, but you don't give his first appearance.
Mm-hmm. It was in X-Force. I do remember that.
He was in Cable 34. He was in X-Force number 1. Right. But it says here Cable 34, X-Force number 1, between Cable, and then he was in Punisher, Deadpool Corps. Okay. Yeah, so if you guys just type in, like, Muslim characters in the Marvel Universe, there is a lot of them. And based on these are from the 90s, so there's no way Kamala Khan is the first one.
Yeah. So we can officially call
that.
Simon Boz was later. Iron Butterfly, I'm not sure. But the fact Arabian Knight from the 70s. He was 70s.
Right.
And once again,
But what I love here is they put these characters in, they don't give their aliases. Like, okay, what is your name? Like this name here, Cameron. I guess that's his hero name. I don't know. They don't give their name. Well, this one, Cameron. All right, he was with the Terrigen Mists, which means he came around 2015. He was in Ms. Marvel. Okay, he was in Ms. Marvel. Great. Now give me, like, these characters here. I'm going to hit the first one. Amir Khan. I think he's related to.
I think that's the father.
Yeah, it's got to be, because it's all new Marvel now. But, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, say anything with the last name Khan, I won't go to. Abdul Rahman. And what about, what's his name? Thinking of Muslim. Oh, crap. From the X-Men books, The Dream Thief. Why can't I get the guy with the fez?
Oh, yeah, Shadow King.
With Shadow King, yeah. What about him? If he's not Muslim, holy crap.
Is that, or he's with the fez hat, he could also be, you know, one of those riding the small little cars in the parades.
Hold on, I'm just looking at Shadow King.
I can't think of the name of the group now. You know, but, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when
I'm
Black
all Farouk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, come on. Hello. But,
here
you know, that's kind of like
on.
When Marvel was going like Black Panther featuring the first African-American superhero. Meanwhile, Wesley Snipes is going.
Did it first. That pissed me off when he said that about Black Panther. I'm like, yeah, Wesley Snipes and Blade, yeah, he did that first. Hello?
You know, okay, they may not be on par with what they do in the MCU, but it counts.
Hello? He was there.
Hell, at least on the third one, they tried to bring in the Midnight Suns. I wouldn't say a great way, but they tried. Or at least the Night Stalkers. I mean, Ryan Reynolds' character, one of the Night Stalkers, and
okay, he's from Egypt. All right, he's now in Krakoa. Right.
Mm-hmm.
First appearance, October 1978, issue 117. See, I'm trying to see where it says his religion, though. They don't have a spot for their religion. That's the problem. It's just, we're just like, he's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got to be. I'm picking that one. All right. If I can, for a moment.
All right.
A show coming to not CW. On Hulu, June 2nd. Do you remember a show called The Orville?
Yes.
Okay. The Orville, New Horizons.
And you just heard from the City of Heroes, Pogo.
Oh, no. You had one job. You were supposed to tell me to... You know... we're just supposed to tell me when to come back.
No, Texas was saying in Champions...
You got me looking up. I'm looking at a database. You're supposed to tell me. He's telling me. I'm looking at a database. I got to set up my Zebek. I got a thing for three screens for my laptop. It slides over my main screen. I got two additional screens. I got one. I could have one for Champions, one for City of Heroes, and I can look up other shit with a third screen. I got to set that thing up. it's that's what I got it for. It's bullshit. It's bullshit. That's what this is. It's bullshit. All right. Anyway, now back to my reading. So, The Orville, New Horizons, is going to set course for adventure. So, do you remember when The Orville was supposed to be a parody of Star Trek and all things sci-fi?
Right.
Also seemed like Seth MacFarlane's greatest desire was to star in his own Star Trek fan fiction series. But, after two seasons on Fox, The Orville has a fan following of its own that favorably compares it to the real Star Trek, and after an extended absence, the third season, The Orville, New Horizons, is just a few weeks away. Hulu has debuted a new trailer for New Horizons, and it's largely played as a straight sci-fi show. There are still a few jokes in the trailer, including the moment that MacFarlane's Captain Ed Mercer finds himself unable to give an inspirational speech without cribbing from Star Wars. The show's optimism and playful nature also shines through. And it has to be said that the special effects look really good this season. Adrian Palicki also stars in the series as Commander Kelly Grayson, with Penny Johnson Gerald as Dr. Claire Finn, Scott Grimes as Lieutenant Gordon Malloy, Peter Macon as Lieutenant Commander Bordas, Jessica Soar as Lieutenant Tala Kayali, Jay Lee as Lieutenant Commander John Lamar Mark Jackson as Isaac, Ann Winters as Charlie Burke, and Chad Coleman as Clyden. The late Norm MacDonald also reprised his vocal role as Lieutenant Yaffet. As I said, this will launch on Hulu on June 2nd. Now, as I mentioned earlier, if you're paying attention, I mentioned something about Fantastic Four reboot. Well, Marvel's Fantastic Four reboot gains Moon Knight's executive producers. The long-awaited Fantastic Four reboot hit a speed bump last month when director John Watts stepped down from the film, but the excitement for the FF's big screen return is at an all-time high. Look, I don't know how high it is after the last two failures. Let's curve that here. I don't know how excited people are. You had two movies that were okay. The last one was a total bomb to the point the director sent out an apology the morning the movie was coming out. So let's curve that excitement. Let's not call it excitement. Let's just go, all right, let's see what you got. I think we're more excited for the X-Men coming back into the X-Men theme. Knowing the FF is coming out means the faster that comes out, the X-Men will be joining the MCU. That's what we're really excited about. Let's you know, come on. As a fan here, I'm just being shown, just being realistic here. Now, we have a better idea of who's in charge of the reboot. Okay, so we know who to blame when this bombs. According to Moon Knight head writer Jeremy Slater, two of his show's executive producers, Grant Curtis and Nick Pepin, have officially signed on to executive produce Fantastic Four. Slater confirmed Curtis and Pepin's involvement with the reboot while speaking to comicbook.com. Their first order of business is to find a new director, along with a writer, to pen the script. But Slater made sure to explain why he won't be joining them, because he's afraid it's going to bomb, it's going to suck ass, and that'll be the end of his career. Before landing Moon Knight, Slater gained notoriety as one of the three credited scribes on Josh Trank's ill-fated Fantastic reboot in 2015. See? That's why. He knows history is going to repeat itself already. And he's fine with not getting a do-over. See? He knows it. No, he doesn't want nothing to do with this. My execs on Moon Knight are the same guys who were running Fantastic Four, says Slater. So we had a lot of talks about it. I was like, I'm not going to pitch you for anything because, honestly, you don't need my stink on it. Neither Pepin nor Curtis were strangers to the Marvel Universe prior to Moon Knight. Pepin's relationship to Marvel Studios dates back to 2016 when he began working as a production assistant.
Now I poofed.
Say, you should have taken that as a warning. Okay, he was working as a production assistant on Captain America Civil War before he worked his way up the chain of command. Meanwhile, Curtis was a producer on Sam Raimi's original Spider-Man trilogy. Slater hasn't shied away from discussing Fantastic Four in the past. In fact, Polygon's 2020 profile, Trank, made it sound as though Slater could have been the reboot saving grace if only he had been given more creative control. The story describes Slater as a badge-carrying nerd who regularly supplied Trank with his favorite FF to make the film more comic accurate. Well, they should have listened to him. But Trank, who didn't seem all that jazzed about the source material to begin with, wasn't interested. Douchebag. Slater now claims that only one line from his original draft made it into the film. What line? Hi? See you later? Okay? Yeah? What? Was it some one-line thing? None of those lines worked. None of them! Regardless, he would have rather had someone else try their hand at Marvel's first family. I can't wait to see it as a fan, but I just know that no one will ever accept a Jeremy Slater Fantastic Four movie for very good reason. It sucked. Hey, Slater, if your Uber driver shows up and you're like, oh, I saw that guy drunk driving last week, you don't get in the car with him. I think there's some things that I just probably need to steer clear from for the rest of my career. And Marvel hasn't announced a release date for Fantastic Four.
And we seem to have bikini-clad women around us. One
is slapping you in the back of the head.
Slapping us.
Well, she's slapping you. They're from the Vault of Violet.
Well, one's from the Vault of Violet. The other one's Siege Perilous.
That's Cassie McKnight. She was down there before.
Yep. And basically, here's a cue, Bunny Night Friday on Dawn Radio. We have parties and...
Maybe it's them in disguise.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the bunnies. Well, one's just collapsing back here. They might be trying the trip trick. No, they fell in front of you.
And we have the face plant.
That's right. There you go. All right. Well, ready for this new. I didn't even know about this one. Dan Stevens will star in Legendary's Godzilla vs. Kong sequel. Legendary's next MonsterVerse entry has just found one of its new leading men. Deadline is reporting that former Legion star Dan Stevens has booked a major role in the studio's follow-up to Godzilla vs. Kong. Director Adam Wingard was invited back to helm the sequel after Godzilla vs. Kong earned mostly positive reviews and made over $468 million at the global box office. The latter was no small feat, since the film was released day and date with HBO Max while the pandemic was still raging. The last film memorably ended with the titular beasts ultimately putting aside the differences to fight Mechagodzilla before going their separate ways. In the end, Kong was left to rule Hollow Earth with Monarch observing his every move. Aside from his three-year stint playing David Haller on Legion, Stevens is known for appearing in Disney's live-action Beauty and the Beast remake and, more recently, the German sci-fi film I'm Your Man. He previously worked with Wingard on 2014's The Guest. Right now, Stevens can be seen in the Starz limited series Gaslit, which premiered last month. And it says here, Godzilla vs. Kong sequel will begin production in Australia later this year. And this isn't the only new MonsterVerse project currently in the works. Apple TV Plus is also developing a spinoff series that will shed new light on the Monarch organization. However, we still don't know if any future installments will feature the return of established characters like Millie Bobby Brown's Madison Russell or Alexander Skarsgård's Nathan Lind. Why is it going to Apple Plus? Who the hell watches Apple Plus?
I don't know.
Who watched Apple TV Plus?
Well, Violet
Brothers
Chotsky,
has announced...
Violet Chotsky says, "We know what you went AFK for." Well, then I'll spill it out here, because something popped over on my phone while you were doing the talking. Johnny Depp.
I didn't know you were AFK.
Yeah. Johnny Depp.
Go ahead.
Has been cast out of Disney. He will no longer be Captain Jack Sparrow.
Oh, we knew that.
Confirmed by Jerry Bruckheimer. It's already been confirmed that he will no longer be part of the Fantastic Beasts as Gellert Grindelwald.
We knew that already.
Yep. They are at the moment. His likeness in the Pirates of the Caribbean Rise.
Go Ride. Yep, that's been taken out.
Jeopardy.
No, that's been taken out already.
Oh, it's already been taken out.
Where did you get this
ago.
News from? Who's your news source? That's like a month behind.
No, this is 2 days ago. May 15th.
Oh, okay.
Disney officially replaces Johnny Depp as Jack Sparrow.
Right. But that was like last month they did that. They announced it like weeks ago.
I'm trying to find who they replaced with.
They are supposed to be doing. All right. They're supposedly doing Pirates of the Caribbean with a new female lead.
Yep, starring Margot Robbie. I just found the name.
Right, okay. Margot Robbie's going to be the replacement. Okay.
Mm-hmm. When Jack Sparrow would return, Bruckheimer goes, "Not at this point. The future is yet to be decided."
It'll probably be his daughter or something like that. I hope it's an established pirate. I don't want it to be like, oh, you're a I'm a pirate. I don't know anything about pirating. No, no, no. Make it an established pirate, please. Mm-hmm. Just make it an established.
It also this article also points out the fate of Amber Heard's Mira in the Aquaman movies is.
I hear
she's
being
still
replaced.
Well,
really? No. Go ahead.
Yeah. Remember, this is an article 2 days ago. It was still up in the air.
I've heard weeks ago that they are replacing, keeping the character, they're replacing the actress.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I heard, so. Replacing the character, I mean, keeping the character, replacing the actress.
All right, so Violet, yes, you knew what we were AFK for. We were doing our research so we could tell you what's going on. So, thank
replacing
you.
Replacing the character, yep. Replacing the characters, I mean, keeping the characters, replacing the actors. What did I say? You know what I mean. Time to go. But I heard he was done anyway. He wasn't going to do a...
Well, he was mainly done as in kicked out with the Fantastic Beasts. It was always
right.
Speculation until recently about Captain Jack Sparrow.
Right. Now he doesn't have a choice. But
yeah.
I heard a few weeks ago that they had already kicked him out, and I heard like a week ago that they were replacing you know what sucks? I was supposed to go to Disney World a couple of times, and I want to see Pirates of the Caribbean. I want to go on now. I'll never see him with the Jack Sparrow cat. No, I'll never see Jack Sparrow on the cat, right?
Yeah, you can see. YouTube. You can always look at it. You can always find it on YouTube.
Right. I know, but still, it's not the same thing. Not the same thing. All right. Anyway, back to my news stories, and then we shall open the book.
Okay.
So, Marvel is celebrating 60 years of Spider-Man with Amazing Fantasy number 1000. 2022 is shaping up to be a pretty big year for Spider-Man milestones. Last week was the 20th anniversary of the Wall Crawler's first movie. Wow. But a much bigger celebration is only 3 months away. Stan Lee and Steve Ditko introduced the world to Peter Parker in Amazing Fantasy number 15 in August 1962. And later this summer, Marvel is toasting the hero's longevity with a special jam-packed issue featuring several all-star creators. Marvel has revealed plans to celebrate Spider-Man's legacy in Amazing Fantasy 1000. And before any of you diehards rush to your collections to see which issues you're missing, relax, it's an arbitrary number. This giant-sized one-shot boasts an assortment of tales spanning the entirety of Spidey's history, all of which will leave a profound impact on the Spider-Man mythos and showcase why Spidey is one of the most beloved heroes in history. The one-shot follows Marvel's latest relaunch of The Amazing Spider-Man, which kicked off with a brand new number one issue last month with Zeb Wells and John Romita Jr. taking over as the book's creative team. Romita also illustrated the cover for Amazing Fantasy number 1000, which you can view below. Readers can also expect several other superstar writers and artists to come along for the ride. The guest list notably includes Neil Gaiman, who is penning his first Marvel story in years. We can also look forward to the Marvel debut of Armando Iannucci, creator of HBO's Veep and Avenue 5. ASM writer Dan Slott and artist Jim Chung will also collaborate on a futuristic tale that examines Peter's relationship with Mary Jane Watson. Meanwhile, novelist Anthony Falcone will team up with artist Michael Cho to introduce a new Spider-Man villain, while Ho Chi Anderson will tackle his own horror-fueled story that finds Peter facing a living nightmare. Other contributors include Rainbow Rowell, Jonathan Hickman, Kurt Busiek, Terry Dodson, and more. Amazing Fantasy number 1000 will hit the comic shops in August.
There you go.
In August, I tell you, go reserve your copies now. Right now, I say. All right. Two more stories. We'll do this quick. All right. Some Doctor Who news. David Tennant and Catherine Tate.
You're AFK.
Will... Okay. Hold on. Yeah, broke my thumb.
Well, you told me to remind you this time. There you go.
Yeah, I know, but not when I'm in the middle of reading a story. I just... Okay. Doctor Who news. David Tennant and Catherine Tate will return to Doctor Who. This must be what all those rumors were about. Earlier in the year, some sources became convinced that David Tennant would once again become the full-time doctor after Jodie Whittaker's tenure ends. That's obviously not the case, but he and Catherine Tate will return to Doctor Who for the 60th anniversary episode, the BBC confirms. Long before Spider-Man No Way Home, Doctor Who made it a tradition for previous incarnations of the Doctor to team up for anniversary specials, beginning with the Three Doctors for the 10th anniversary and the Five Doctors for the 20th. Actor mortality and a multi-year hiatus kept the number from expanding beyond that, but Tennant and Matt Smith teamed up for the 50th, along with a cameo from Tom Baker. That was awesome. It may take some heavy plot lifting to explain Tate's return as Donna Noble, since the Doctor wiped himself from her memories to save her life. Any memory of her time in the TARDIS could be fatal. But, by way of explanation, returning showrunner Russell T. Davies will only say, maybe this is a missing story, or a parallel world, or a dream, or a trick, or a flashback. The only thing I can confirm is that it's going to be spectacular, as two of our greatest stars reunite for the battle of a lifetime. A parallel universe version of Tennant's Doctor left to be with Rose Tyler, so that's always a possibility to revisit. Tennant are currently filming for the episode to air in 2023. One more news. I can't believe this, how I missed this one. So, Doctor Who casts its new Doctor. The new doctor is me. And once I start filming, Paragon Radio will go on hiatus. Sorry, all. I got to go pack my bags and get over to England. I got to go to Cardiff. See you later. No, I'm just kidding. No, but they do have a new doctor. None of you even blinked when I said that. None of you even blinked. How dare you? The possibility never even crossed your mind. That's you turncoats. How dare you? No, the new doctor is, I can't even say this guy's name, Nkudi Gatwa. He will be the first black actor to play the doctor. Well, first black acting man, African man, because there was a black female who played the part. The only thing constant in Doctor Who has changed. And with Jodie Whittaker's 13th Doctor on her way out after one final special, it's time for a new Doctor to enter the TARDIS. BBC has announced that Doctor Who has cast Nkudi Gatwa as the 14th Doctor. He will also become the first black actor to lead the show, but not the first actor of African descent to play the Doctor. Joe Martin previously played a fugitive Doctor during Whittaker's seasons on the show. There aren't quite the words to describe how I'm feeling, said Gatwa in a statement, a mix of deeply honored, beyond excited, and, of course, a little bit scared. This role and show means so much to so many around the world, including myself. And each one of my incredibly talented predecessors has handled that unique responsibility and privilege with the utmost care. I will endeavor my utmost to do the same. Appropriately enough, the 14th Doctor will take over the leading role in the 14th season of the revival series. Former Doctor Who showrunner Russell T. Davies is once again in charge of the franchise. Huzzah! And Gatwa expressed his excitement about working with him. Russell T. Davies is almost as iconic as the Doctor himself, and being able to work with him is a dream come true, noted Gatwa. His writing is dynamic, exciting, incredibly intelligent, and fizzing with danger. An actor's metaphorical playground, the entire team have been so welcoming and truly give their hearts to the show. And so, as much as it's daunting, I'm aware of joining a really supportive family. Unlike the Doctor, I may only have one heart, but I'm giving it all to the show. Gatwa's best-known role is Eric F. Young on Netflix's Sex Sex Education. He has also appeared in Horrible Histories, the movie Rotten Romans, The Last Letter from Your Lover, and Stonemouth. Katwa has also been cast in Margot Robbie's live-action Barbie movie. Doctor Who Season 14 will premiere in 2023, just in time for the 60th anniversary of the show. However, Katwa will make his first appearance as the 14th Doctor in Whittaker's final Doctor Who special this fall. Okay. Well, that's it for the updates. And now it's time. As you heard the door creak open.
Before you do that, I got to mention here. You're getting a kick out of this one. You talk about getting all the Doctor Who's at one time.
Yeah.
They kind of did that. The Muppets take the O2.
Really?
It was a 2018 concert by Jim Henson and Disney, featuring a Pigs in Space sketch, and they had an extended Doctor Who spoof. What happened was Colonel Link got beamed in because he found out that he was a Time Lord, and we got to hit the button so get him back here. So they start hitting the button, and they go through all of them. Sam the Eagle, the first Doctor, Gonzo, the second, Pepe, the third, Fozzie Bear is Tom Baker, Scooter is, Peter Davidson, the fifth one, Lips is the sixth Doctor, Bunsen is the seventh Doctor, Uncle Deadly, the eighth Doctor, Rizzo, the ninth Doctor, Kermit's the 10th, that's David Tennant, Walter's the 11th, Floyd's the 12th, and finally, doing
Miss
the Jodie Whittaker,
the
is Piggy. You can look at it at, it is on YouTube if you want to see the whole skit.
That's cool,
They even got it down to the costumes.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, now, we've gone to the crypt. We've gone to the tomb. We've gone to the tomb to get the tome. I keep doing that. In this book I have. Through the years, we've had some awesome heroes. From awesome teams. The Avengers. The X-Men. Some of the Fantastic Four. I don't know. That's a hit or miss, depending who you think of. The Justice League. Teen Titans. Individual heroes from those teams. And then you get these guys, half-baked heroes from comic book history. These are the ones you go, what the bleep were they thinking? They are the League of Regrettable Superheroes.
Let's see, can we out-doozy some of the ones we've had before?
I'm sure we could. This first one, this is great. Created by Unknown. Nobody took credit for this one. Debuted in Spitfire Comics number 1 of Harvey Comics in 1941. Possible alternate identities are the Avenging Paperweight, the much regretted career change. The quote, I'm giving away free passes. Here's yours, buddy. The name is simply The Clown. Many superheroes receive inspiration for their adventures, alter egos, from some important personal symbol. A bat crashes through the window of a gloomy study. A childhood taunt becomes a high-flying alias. A symbol from a destroyed world stands for hope. And if you are the frustrated and embattled police commissioner Nick Nolan, a ceramic paperweight depicted a fat, jolly clown will do the trick. The newly appointed commissioner trains his sights on racketeer Harry Judd, the resident bad guy who holds the city in the grip of a terrible crime spree, and whose fancy lawyers are able to spring every man the cops throw in the pokey. You just produced this writ of habeas corpus. Free him, Judd says, telling his personal attorney how to do his job. Frustrated and worn out, Nolan finds himself idly regretting that he was forced to carry on the family tradition of law enforcement. Recalling the merry, carefree days of his youth, he regards a clown-shaped paperweight and bemoans, oh, to be back in the old circus again. And that gives him an idea. Soon, The rotund and jolly figure of a clown takes to city streets, advertising a circus, which oddly never seems to materialize, and promptly curtailing a shakedown being carried out by Judd's men. Before long, the clown has clobbered two of Judd's toughest thugs, forced his way into the crime boss's office, and received an invitation from the city's king of rackets to join the sprawling criminal enterprise. Don't worry, kids, the clown's just playing along. Offering equal partnership to a thug-slugging clown doesn't seem like the wisest way to operate a criminal empire. But Judd's the expert, I guess. The clown get-up works wonders for Nolan. For his brusque manner, comical disguise, and a handful of juggling balls packed with knockout gas allow him access to the gangster's books. Before you could say Emmett Kelly, Judd and his criminal empire are shut down permanently. A roaring success for one of the most ludicrous superhero disguises on record. After a second appearance, the clown permanently bowed out. And that was the clown from the Golden Age.
Okay.
And now we bring you to the Silver Age. This hero created by Joe Simon, Otto Binder, and Bill Drott. His level difficulty, oh, this is going to be funny, hundreds of pieces, ages 8 and up.
Oh, no.
He debuted, Harvey Comics, September 1966, debuted in Jigsaw number 1. His quote, I'm lucky to be alive, I guess. I speak of none other than Jigsaw.
No relation to the Punisher villain.
That's right. This is an actual hero. As the blurb on the cover of the hero's debut warns, don't laugh at the Jigsaw Man. His mechanical parts make him the greatest crime fighter on Earth. Well, if they didn't want us to laugh, they probably shouldn't have made the Jigsaw Man look like that. The man of 1,000 parts, whose mechanical parts make him the greatest crime fighter on Earth, begins his career in outer space. Colonel Gary Jason, having two first names is almost a guarantee that one will become a superhero of some sort. The astronaut with the Earth Space Force and pilot of the exploratory orbital vessel Stargazer 1 is caught up in a magnetic cone that is stealing rocks, trees, and animals from remote Siberia and depositing them on the moon, battered and bruised by fast-moving space debris. Left teetering on the edge of death, Colonel Jason is rescued by the rock-stealing but otherwise well-meaning aliens behind the phenomena. Eager to ensure that Earthlings view them as friendly, the metallic extraterrestrials make up for their cosmic faux pas by rebuilding the badly broken astronaut, for better or worse. During a hasty operation, a sort of reverse alien autopsy, the human's broken body is replaced with gaudy multicolored plates that interlock around his limbs and torso, in Jigsaw fashion. Even more alarming than Colonel Jason's new form is his exponential increase in strength and sudden stretchability. The moon mile of synthetic tendons that replaced Jason's shattered limbs were also limitlessly elastic, granting Jigsaw the power to dramatically telescope parts of his body. Stretchy superheroes are not particularly uncommon in comic books, but Jigsaw is one of the few whose ability to elasticize his body is manifested in a genuinely unsettling manner. Rather than smoothly expanding like a rubber band, the interlocking plates on Jigsaw's body separate, allowing his ropey alien tendons to swing free. Oh, that's a lovely visual. Oh, excuse me, kids. That's my tendon swinging there. Don't throw up. No. Good Lord. It's appropriate that Jigsaw's origin seems to borrow so much from 1960s era sci-fi suspense programs, The Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits. For example, given that the manifestation of his power is utterly terrifying, the Space Force is convinced that Jason has been replaced by an alien monster, while his girlfriend responds to his newly elastic existence with a prolonged shriek of horror. So Jigsaw spends most of his subsequent adventures puzzling about in outer space. He enlists in a cosmic Cold War battle against the sinister Pulitz, a conquering alien empire. Once fully assembled, Jigsaw stymies the Pulitz plans and competes in the Interplanetary Olympics. After that, Jigsaw evidently fell to pieces and hasn't yet been put back together again. Good Lord. Good Lord.
All right, the painful one, the one that we'll probably all remember.
I don't
the
know.
The current.
I don't. Yes, and the modern one. This one was created by Steve Ditko. Oh, Steve, you let us down.
Oh, no.
All right, this one, possible secret identity, Ayn Rand? Really? Oh, my God. Debuted in E-Man number 2 of Charlton Comics, December 1973. His quote, it's a smiley face emoji. Name is Killjoy. And the smiley face emoji is because Killjoy doesn't speak. One of the best known and best regarded comic creators in the history of the medium, the reclusive Steve Ditko can claim a roster of original creations that reads like a who's who of the best known and most innovative superheroes of the past 50 years. He was co-creator of Marvel Comics Spider-Man and Doctor Strange, as well as some classically offbeat characters including Hawk and Dove and the Creeper for DC, a host of heroes and villains for Charlton Comics, and relatively recent introductions, Speedball and Squirrel Girl. But it's when he's working solo or minus an editor to stay his hand that Ditko comes up with his wildest inspirations. Take, for example, the frenetic Static, the bizarre Missing Man, and the objectivist vigilante Mr. A metal masked superhero dedicated to philosophical absolutionism. A equals A, as he says, a mathematical formula that supposes unqualified moral definitions. Many of Ditko's most interesting characters are as likely to lecture their enemies on ethical absolutism as they are to clobber them senseless. Much in this vein is Killjoy, an orange-suited hero who knocks crybaby criminals unconscious in a satire that combines the action of Spider-Man with the objective ethics of The Question, or at least Ditko's original version of that off-repurposed character. Killjoy's world is overrun with criminals crying for equal rights. Amid an armed robbery, the green-suited Robin Hood and his merry men argue all wealth is stolen, advocating that it should be crime's turn to be legal. The militaristic General Disaster shouts that he has a right to be a dictator. An entire rogues gallery of whining crooks populate Killjoy's densely packed 8-page stories, including the advocates for social change called Mr. Heart and Mr. Soul, S-O-L-E. The pair bemoans that it is cruel to prevent criminals from pursuing their profession. Killjoy's story is a broad parody of what Ditko sees as a society that has compromised its ethics. Killjoy never utters a word during his appearances, or does he? After the hero departs the scenes of his repeated triumphs, inevitably another person shows up, Ed Gadd, reporter, Al Ace, counterintelligence, Judd Law, lawyer, and others, any of whom might be Killjoy in disguise. We're never given an origin for the character, but those details are beside the point for such a weirdly entertaining figure. And there you go. And that is Killjoy. And those are this week's entries from the League of Regrettable Superheroes.
Let's see. We got 10 minutes left.
Oh, okay. I didn't think I was going to get through them all. Okay. Shut up. Don't want to bonk, bonk, bonk. Go back and get away from us. In a way, yeah.
Oh, okay. Then we can mention something. Me and Pogo have talked about for DawnCon the Fast and the Furious. It is still going to be in Canada. So
yes, because that's the road is very nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we did talk about like going around Monster Island or making a map in Vibora Bay. But looks like we are keeping
You know what it is? It's except for the end of the road that it's isolated over there. No one really bothers us. You know what I mean? It's like we hang out over there.
The cosmic. Then we got to all move.
No, no, no. But I mean, even if we go to a zone, even if we have to switch zones, it's like that stretch of road over there. No one bothers us. You know what I mean? It's just like we hang out there. And no one could, you know what I mean? No one, like.
Well, I mean, once you're on your bike, you know, it's like, remember, we tested. You can't bump them off the road or, you know, the only way you can blast them is they accept the PvP. By the time, you know, that rocket drops here, they're already out of the zone in a heartbeat.
Right. But no one really, you know, unless you're there for that, no one really comes over there and says, hey, what's going on? Like, everybody's there for one purpose. Everybody's there for that. Mm-hmm. So.
And that still will be planned on the first Sunday of DawnCon, so that will be before Fritz in Texas. Yep, we're going to have Silver Egret redo the spotter. Alan will still be the race starter.
Of course.
Hopefully, if Boop joins us, he doesn't have a vehicle that conks
engine
out at
the time.
Yeah.
he was about to cross that finish line by a mile. I mean, he was there, and all of a sudden, his engine sputtered. I mean, he could have got out and pushed that thing across the finish, and he would have won, but...
And a tip for all those who want to enter, start fusing vehicle mods and get
Start doing it now.
Speed and control.
Right. You want speed, you want control. Get a vehicle that's fast. You don't need combat for this. There's no fighting. If you want to help out, if you're not going to race, you want to help out high-level characters because towards the end of the lap, there's always high level, I forget what they're called, but we can use help fighting. Not level 11s, no. Nothing under level 20. Like level 30s would help us out to fight off the, whatever they're called down there.
Right.
So that would help us out.
And Vixen has volunteered to do the, visual on her Twitch stream.
That would help. I'm gonna try and have my Twitch stream going by then. I have a Twitch stream. That would help. Mm-hmm. How many days of events? Because this is DawnCon 8. Are we going to do 8 days of events? I don't know if it was mentioned last week on air. I actually have to have... I was talking to Al, but he wants me to do something for that Sunday, for that last Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to mention it now. I don't want to mention it yet.
Right.
But something is being planned that will be on Twitch. So.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time we changed ideas at the, you know, at the 11th hour.
and it's not what I thought it was. When he mentioned it to me, I went, huh? So.
But I will say this. We had a change of offer for the champions. Panda Monica, who has still been scarred after your answer on that one Family Feud question, offers Crab Race. Crab Games. Squid Games, though it's Crab Games. And Texas and Fritz and Amber were playing, and the first few minutes, all I heard was, I died. I'm going like, what is this, Temple of Elemental Evil? It's like, you go into the tomb, or Tomb of Horrors. You go into the tomb, you die, tear your character.
Hold on.
Up.
Okay, it's funny you mentioned the Temple of Elemental Evil, because you know what's funny? Like, if you look at Dungeons and Dragons nowadays, like I think a Critical Role, how like they're role playing, you know, and their voice actors are playing. The original Dungeons and Dragons game, right? Like Gygax made it. He didn't make it for role playing. He made it for like dice rolling. He made it for like you go into the dungeon. There's going to be death traps and pits and all. He just made it for that. He didn't make it like friends of mine, like when we play it, we make it for character development and role playing and this and that. Gygax did not make it for that.
No,
he would have been like, if you want, oh, you want to role play, you want to develop your characters, go join the Thespian Society. That's not what this game is for. He would have been like, what the hell's going on here? He looks down on that. I thought that was kind of funny. It's like, here we are trying to, you know, and it's funny because friends of mine, like any game we play, like Champions Now, I like the role-playing, but that's, you know, not Gygax's game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like a friend of mine, he always
goes, that was the same with Tomb of Horrors.
Right. Oh, yeah, a lot of the modules he made. You look at it, and it's just straightforward. You're going through, blah, 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 blah. There weren't like, side quests to, like, all right, you want to develop your character and this and that, blah, blah. No, there was none of that shit back then. Like one of the guys we know, like, he would always go, like, any game he played. Well, in Dungeons & Dragons, Gary Gygax shuns role-playing. Like, you know what? We're not playing D&D anymore. This isn't Gary Gygax's game. As a matter of fact, in this game, you get experience points if you role-play. So guess what? You're not getting any. You see how everybody was role-playing? And he would just sit there, come on, let's go. Come on. Enough of this shit. Let's speed it up. And it's like, no, you see how everybody's communicating tonight and they're developing their characters? This is what's going on.
But the thing is, out of all the, you know, things that they've made for the games, even to this date, you want to put fear of God in a D&D player? Break out the temple or break out the tomb.
Oh, no. I got one for you. Gelatinous cube. Because what's funny is, for the longest time, you know, it's like I was talking to, my DM about it. He's like, you know what's funny? Back in the day, you always found yellow mold or a gelatinous cube. And we haven't seen that in years. Oh, we got 90 seconds. And he was laughing, all right? And in this module, we were playing an old school Slave War series.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, there was yellow mold in the dresser. And then down the hall, there was a gelatinous cube. I was like, holy shit. And one of the friends goes, you had to mention. He goes, no, I was laughing earlier because he mentioned it. He goes, and it's in this module. He didn't read it. It's just in the old modules, they had them in every one of them. I was like, dude, these were trademarks of the old school modules.
Mm-hmm.
The newer ones, they don't have them.
I think the last one I remember was a gelatinous cube that if you try to go through it, your stuff didn't dissolve. You just got drunk.
Oh, God, that's a good one. All right, we got less than 60 seconds. Hold on. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. You guys rock. We'll see you next Monday night for another episode of Paragon Radio. We'll discuss this further then. We'll discuss more role-playing. We can discuss more role-playing. I know Alto wanted to bring the subject of role-playing, like role-playing champions versus champions online. So maybe we'll do that next week, and we'll discuss other role-playing games versus playing online. We'll do that next week. How about that? All right. Thank you all for tuning in. And Mr. Viking, anything you'd like to say in closing, sir?
Say goodnight, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie. 10 seconds. I think the Greatest Generation podcast is coming up right next.
Mm-hmm.
And what's on tap? Do you know what episode it is, or you don't know?
Not right offhand. Nope.
Okay. Well, we'll see you next week, everybody. Stay tuned for that, and stay dawnradio.live, and embrace the dawn. All the DJs are awesome. We'll see you next week again. for Paragon Radio. Be super. See you next week. Thank you, everybody. You guys rock. And with that, once you get to that, I'm going to end the show right now, if you don't mind. Okay.
Yep, we're set.
Okay, I'm ending the show right now in 3, 2, 1. Good night, everybody. See you next week. Right. Great show tonight, sir. Thank you.
Unfortunately, I
Thank
can't
you.
Hear you because of the...
Thank you for co-hosting. All
okay.
Right. Thank you for co-hosting. Good night. Bye.